Monsieur B pour Alter Info avec Dan Nikon à la route du rock. Hello, you tonight you will play solo, but recently you play with lots of people in the Dan Nikon ensemble. Did this experience change your solo set?
Oh, definitely. I remember the first show I did after playing solo for, you know, like a year, after playing with the ensemble for like a year straight. The first solo show I did was in Amsterdam, right at the end of the ensemble tour in Europe, and it was just so weird. You know, I've been playing solo for, you know, 5 years at that point, and it, for some reason, this thing that I've done hundreds of times instantly felt foreign and bizarre, and it was cool. It was refreshing. It took something that I had a system for and had become routine, and it made it new and fresh and made me think about the performance in a much different way, and, you know, think about the way I interact with sound solo or versus the musicians. Like when I play with the ensemble, it's very different. When I play solo, it's a lot easier for me to like while out and not worry about, you know, being off time or going deliberately off time to, like, you know, be off with the beat, and because the beat's going to stay steady because it's, you know, a sequencer. But with humans, I've got to think a lot more, and I need to watch for cues, and I need to give cues. So, but it's also more free at the same time. We're like, as an organism, we can speed up, or we can slow down, or we can get quiet, or we can build up. But live, it's just different. They're two different beasts. They both have their, you know, their pros and their cons.
Have you prepared for tonight a special mud set?
people love asking about this mud.
That's because we were yesterday.
Yeah, I heard it was intense. I'm going to see how it goes and see how the audience seems to, you know, vibe. And it seems like it's a pretty mellow night overall musically, and my music is not very mellow. So we'll see how the audience reacts to a, you know, up-tempo dance set. They're okay, cool. Well, that's good to know. I didn't know. Yeah, I'm probably not going to do anything that's dangerous. Sometimes I do some stuff that is borderline dangerous. Mm-hmm. We won't do any of that tonight because it's dark and people will probably be drunk and tired. And nothing dangerous. We'll keep it within the realm of safety. Okay. But, I mean, the show is really, it's just as much as the audience decision as it is mine. Like, they're steering the concert. Like, I know a lot of people.
Some people do very dangerous things yesterday.
I know a lot of musicians say it's like, you know, the audience, I get my energy from the audience, but I definitely do. If the audience isn't there, I'm not there. And, like, you know, since I play in the crowd and in the audience, it's very much an audience-driven performance. You know, 99% of the people watching the show can only see the audience. So it's this feedback loop, and, you know, that's why I try to do that so that the audience, I want the audience looking at each other and not at me. Do you know what I mean? So that gets them going, gets them moving. Especially since it is dance music, or it's movement-based music. It's not really dance music, but I think you know what I mean.
On the web, we could find a page where there's all your gear, and when you click on some of them, there's video when you explain some of them and what. And what I find very interesting, that you speak about lo-fi material. I've got a sequencer, it's a $5 sequencer, and I find it quite refreshing in the time of there's some kind of race to the coolest and the oldest keyboard. And is there some kind of low technology philosophy in your work?
Well, I was real, real poor when I did that interview. So I was trying to, you know, make do with the best that I could. But no, I mean, like, any instrument has its strengths and its weaknesses, and I feel like a lot of, you know, I mainly know American music and the American DIY, so a lot of American music is rooted in lo-fi because it starts in houses or garages or basements, and people are people work with what they have, and, you know, I, as a composer, I want to, you know, deal with all timbres and all aspects of sound. So lo-fi sounds are beautiful, but high fidelity sound is beautiful as well. It's nice to mix them both. You know, sometimes it's nice to hear a really dirty tape recording, and other times it's nice to hear, like, you know, beautiful ribbon mics in a silent, precise room. So I don't like to rule out any particular thing and be like, no, that's not for me. Lo-fi all the way, or fuck lo-fi. Like, they're both, you know, the whole spectrum of sound deserves, you know, equal attention.
And on your website, you got a list of projects you're working with. And for example, the project I'm most interested in is the Dan Deacon Ensemble album. Will it be released soon? Or?
I don't know about soon, but
we're
in the middle of recording it. This tour and holiday sort of put it on hold for a little bit, but it'll definitely come out. I was hoping you were going to say the project you were most excited about was beating Ed Schrader at Ken Griffey Jr.'s baseball, but it wasn't. This is the first album that I'm writing where I am not putting a due date on it. I just want to go in and I want to experiment. And I want to, with every other record, it's more been like documentations of songs that were already written. I'd be like, all right, here's the song. It's written. Let's make it exist. Where with this, I want to do more 50-50. I want it to be like, here's the skeleton. Let's give it meat. Let's give it soul. So maybe it'll be, you know, it's an experiment. So hopefully it'll be a successful experiment.
Let's see what's good.
Exactly.
Another project is the Francis Ford Coppola's film scoring project, Twixt. Yes.
I finished writing the music for that probably about 2 months ago, or submitted the music to.
It's something you already asked, right? For short films.
No? This is my first narrative film, and it's my. The first time writing music for a feature-length film. You know, it's like some of it's arrangement of another composer's work, some of it's original composition, some of it's co-composition. So it's been a huge learning experience. And, you know, the other stuff that I worked on with, you know, friends like Jimmy Joe Roche and stuff like that, the films were much more experimental and much more free, where this movie has a definitive narrative and there's themes and there's, you know, it's... There was a temp music track that I was supposed to listen to and try to write according to that. So it definitely, like, you know, it was a big shift for me. And, you know, it's my first time doing something like this. And, you know, I appreciate Zoetrope and Francis, you know, taking the risk and involving me in the project. And, you know, it's been a great learning experience. And I hope more, you know, film and cinema work comes up from it.
In the list, the most intriguing project was the recording of a tape of sad songs, and I'm pretty intrigued. What could it be?
It's funny. I was just thinking about that today, and how I was supposed to do it literally over a year ago, and just been real busy. And there's songs that I play on the organ. I play them live sometimes under the name Partalence Bird, but. I don't know how to release them. I might release them, you know, just on my own or through a label. And part of me wants to put them on the new record as Dan Deacon. But I don't know. I just need to record them. I'm in the middle of building a studio. So hopefully when I get home, the organ will be there and in Baltimore. And they'll finally get recorded and they'll exist.
I'm only familiar with two of your many, many albums, Spider-Man and the Ring and Bronzed. And what I find striking in the evolution, in the same time, it's the same music, and it's wider, it's stranger, and how your music is evolving next.
I think when I first started writing music that was on, like, Spider-Man and some of the tracks on Bromst, I was still ignorant to a lot of the world. And, you know, I was playing mainly basements and small clubs. And after Spider-Man got, you know, the reception that it did, I started traveling more and seeing a lot more of the world. And I don't know, just experienced more. And I feel like that, like, crazy element is still there, but it's different. I still like to party and celebrate, but I don't like it to be just for the sake of it. You know what I mean? When I was like, you know, in my early 20s, it was fun just, you know, to party and get wasted, and I'm not that person anymore. I still like to party and get wasted, but I won't get wasted, but just not for the hell of it. You know, it's fun to have a good time, and I don't know, I think the new record is going to be, I'm going to try to take elements of both the records. I feel like Spider-Man was I think Spider-Man had really good pop elements to it, and it had a unique perspective on pop music. And I feel like Bromst had, the strengths on Bromst were the epic nature of the songs and the lushness and the long form song, the long song format. But I feel like both of them have their strengths and their weaknesses, and if I can take the strengths of both of them and put them on that new record so that there's both pop, you know, a strong pop sensibility, but at the same time, some tracks that have a real epic nature to them, I think it'll be cool.
Where did the beautiful tent on the Bromst cover come from?
Me and my girlfriend made it. I designed the pattern and got it printed at this place in San Francisco, and she sewed it together and based on my designs. And I've never designed anything to be sewn, so I didn't leave her any leeway or room for error, and she wanted to kill me, rightfully so. But you know, I think she sewed it up really nice, and I've displayed it in a few art shows, and one in Baltimore and one in Toronto, and like to take it on tour. I got this special waterproof fabric that I go, especially when you put lights in it, I think it looks really nice. But maybe the next tour. But thanks, I'm glad no one ever asks, and I'm glad you asked. Took a long fucking time to make. And it was supposed to be photographed in the day on the front in the spring. And then the front was supposed to be in the, you know, in the daytime, and the back was supposed to be lit from the inside at night in the winter. But it took us so long to make that spring came and went, and we had to photograph it in fall if we wanted it to come out. So the whole project fucking changed at the last minute, but you know, that's how it goes.
And to finish, could you tell us three of the album you couldn't live without?
I guess Music for 18 Musicians by Steve Reich. Neil Young, either Harvest or After the Gold Rush, either one. If you were to throw one of those in there, it would be good. And Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel. Those are my three. Not very, but those are the three. If I had to pick right now, those would be it. Or three mixtapes from my friend James Petz.
Thank you very much.